Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ghoul Society. I'm Jamie, and I'm going to be hosting for you our last bedtime story of the summer season. So get cozy, maybe grab a cup of tea, snuggle into some blankets, and enjoy the story. We are grateful to be recording on the unceded Stolen Territories. I'm grateful to be recording on the unceded Stolen Territories of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations, and the Lekwungen and Wissahnich peoples whose historical relations with the land continue to this day. As uninvited guests on this land, we are committed to disrupting racism and colonial violence within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this podcast, you've officially been inducted into the Ghoul Society. So, this evening, I am going to take you on a little tour of a beautiful space in a beautiful place. Nestled in the winding hilly suburbs of Victoria, BC, is a 136-year-old castle that seems befitting to Dracula himself. Built in the chateauesque architectural style, Craig Derrick Castle is a 39-room Victorian-era building that spans over 25,000 square feet. Originally, this castle was built for Scottish immigrant and coal overlord Robert Dunsmuir and his wife, Joan. You might remember us chatting about Dunsmuir before, as well as touching on Craig Derrick in our episode about Hatley Castle, but today I wanted to share with you the ghostly imprints that are still embedded within this mansion's walls. Craig Derrick Castle was built on the traditional territories of the Lekwungen peoples, known today as the Esquimalt and Songhees Nations. The specific land site that Dunsmuir purchased consisted of large rocky outcroppings that supported native plant life, such as gary oaks, snowberry, and ocean spray. Most likely, this area was stewarded and cultivated for various resource gathering and would have been, much like all the land on this southern island, an important place for Lekwungen people's livelihoods. By 1880, Dunsmuir purchased various parcels of land which were stolen from the First Nations by the Canadian government, eventually accumulating 28 acres. By 1887, construction began on the castle. He had three daughters who were not yet married, and the mansion would be the perfect venue to launch them into married life. This was of a time where women, young girls, would stay with their families and stay in their homes until they were married off to someone else, typically married off to men. However, Dunsmuir never got to see all of this come to fruition. Before the mansion was completed, he died, quote, from paralysis, end quote, in April 1889. Now, I did some digging on this term, and I couldn't come to a solid conclusion, but it sounds like Dunsmuir probably died from a stroke or a heart attack. After his death, Joan spent some time traveling in Europe, and once construction was complete, her and their three unmarried daughters and two orphaned grandchildren took up residence in 1890. I couldn't find anything about these orphaned grandchildren. I believe it was from their son, who had actually passed away, which we'll get a little bit into. But just know that it was Joan, three of the daughters, and then two grandchildren all in this castle together. Now, the mansion or castle was state of the art. It had electric and gas lighting, a speaking tube system for communication throughout the house, 17 fireplaces, hot water radiators, a telephone, and it was connected to a municipal water supply, which of course at this time was extremely rare. The castle grounds had a formal landscape on the south lawn and stairs that led down to the gary oak forest where guests could enjoy the tennis courts, a summer house, walking trails, ponds, and streams. For two decades, Joan lived this lavish lifestyle, though she often claimed that she thought it was ostentatious, until her death at the castle around 1908. I didn't hear a lot about her death. I think she just died from either illness or old age, so it wasn't too tragic. But, of course, it was still a death. Eventually, the property was subdivided and the castle was raffled off, having various owners until the 1970s when it was taken over by the Craigderrick Castle Historical Museum Society. Throughout its years, it also served as a military hospital and Victoria College, which intensifies the lore and history within the castle walls. We can recognize that while people lived here, they also died here. And we have some record of that as well. We know that Joan passed away within the castle, but she wasn't the only one. Robert and Joan had 11 children in total, with 10 of them making it to adulthood, which are far greater chances than most families at that time. One of their children died in infancy at home, while another daughter, named Agnes, actually died soon after her father, also in the home. After the father's death and a lengthy battle for ownership of the family company between one of their sons, named Alex, and between Joan, Alex actually died on his honeymoon in 1900. Now, this death pitted Joan and James, the other son, against each other for control of Alex's will, ending with James never speaking to his mother again. So there was that battle between Alex and Joan, then Alex dies, and then there's a battle between Joan and James as well. So this is a lot of tumultuous energy that's happening, and that only ends up ramping up the energy within the house, within the castle. Now, visitors to the castle say that they have heard whispers, a child's cry, and that they can even hear the sounds of a piano playing from another room. However, strangely, the castle doesn't even have a piano. So where is this music even coming from? Other visitors have claimed to see Joan strolling down the ornate steps of the castle's main staircase in a ball gown, though I'm not sure how true this would be, as Joan seemed like she didn't quite like showing off the glitz and glam of her wealth. Some people have reported that in the basement, there's a childlike specter staring at the ground, but when guests have tried to approach them, they vanish before making contact. Others claim to smell the scent of burning candles, feel random cold spots throughout the castle, and objects will seemingly move on their own. Could Robert or Joan Dunsmuir be clinging to their life at the mansion? Especially for Robert, who unfortunately never got the chance to live in the house that he yearned so deeply for, these spiritual moments could very well be connected to the Dunsmuirs themselves. Now, if you want to hear more information about the Dunsmuirs and listen to another castle story, check out our Hatley Castle episode. I believe it's from episode 10, which was the live show that we did at the Halloween YYJ market 2 Halloweens ago now. So if you're interested, you can go check that out. Today, Craigderrick Castle hosts tours, educational programming, and you can even rent the castle as a venue for your lavish events. If you find yourself in the heart of Victoria looking for something to do, I recommend even walking around the grounds or checking out the castle's architecture. If you do, though, be sure to look in all the windows to see if you might catch a glimpse of one of the castle's spirits. Thank you so much for tuning in to this super short bedtime story. We are really excited to get back into our regularly scheduled programming for Ghoul Society, and thanks so much for joining us on these little summer adventures. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or critiques, you can find all of our contacts information in the episode's description. Sarah knows all of this off the top of her heart. Unfortunately, I do not, so I will have them listed there, but you can always email us at ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody, and we will see you next time. Bye!